What's up, everyone? This is the Celtics Talk Podcast. We got Forsberg, A'Sherrod Blakely, and it's my pleasure to bring in our guy, J. Michael, Pacers reporter for the Indianapolis Star. J. Michael, how you doing, man? You good?
I'm doing good, man. I'm actually already down here in Florida. I actually have a place down here, so I've been here during the entire pandemic, about a mile and a half from the beach, but I've been avoiding people, so I'm good.
He's down in beautiful Florida, a mile and a half from the beach, got folks outside making sure the lawn is manicured just right. Wow. How can I get a job at the Indy Star? I'm just saying. Obviously, they're doing something right.
Hey, man, I got the best lawn guy. He comes once a week. I pay him $125 a month. He cuts the entire yard, and it's not a small yard. And
he does everything.
Now, the side note is he's almost like 75, 80 years old, so I don't know how much.
That's messed up, so dude. Come on, man.
Cheap labor.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he loves doing it. He does like a bunch of houses in the neighborhood. That's like $125 a month, so he comes four times a month.
That's not the hustle you have at 75. That's the hustle you get at 15.
Right.
So, hey, man, I got no complaints.
Yeah, that's you got to respect your elders better than that. 125, bump him up to 200 at least.
Does he get a tip?
No, he said, look, we said to him how much, and that's what he said. And apparently, he charges all the same thing. So I'm like, wow, he must think this is like 1950 or something, and it's actually a high rate. Like, all right, dude.
Oh, man, that's messed up. So many areas.
What's the temperature out there? Is this man in danger? What's the temperature out there right now?
Well, right now it's pretty good. It's cool today. It's about 80 degrees. But it's been previous week it was close to 90. So yeah, you know, he was.
If you want to go bring him some water?
He's never asked.
Never asked for water. I ain't saying nothing.
Y'all make it seem like I'm not saying anything.
Not gonna
have to bump you up in the 50s.
Got that old man out there cutting your grass. No water. My goodness.
Well, we got a hose.
Yo, you're making it worse, bro. You're making it worse, man. I want to have a discussion, man, you know, because so much is going on in the NBA. You cover the Pacers, obviously, and we'll jump into – you know, what's going on with the Pacers. But just give me your thoughts on where the NBA is now, J. Michael. You know, Kyrie's, you know, getting guys together to maybe not play the season because of social justice, maybe safety down there in Orlando. What are you hearing and what are your thoughts?
Yeah, man, don't you guys miss Kyrie in Boston?
Rod does.
I talked to about two of the players who were on the executive committee for the union last week. So I wasn't surprised that there's been a little pushback from some guys not wanting to play or being worried about playing. And, you know, I think when you have, 450 plus players, if you really kind of consider that everybody, you're going to have to send in opinions. And there's going to be some people. I think that's natural. I think actually having that pushback is okay. I think it's healthy for discussion. That it's maybe some things that other guys didn't consider. Maybe they're going to still say, hey, I still want to play. But you at least kind of open them up to other positions to think about before they make a decision that could impact them long-term. So I'm not as up in arms with that. I think if probably it was someone other than Kyrie pushing for it, maybe it's received a little bit differently because he's such a contrarian. It almost seems like it could come from a place of just, you know, whatever position you are, he's going to be the opposite. And I think a lot of people had that kind of reaction to him. But in terms of the league coming back, look, man, we know money is really important to the people up in that office in New York. Not giving back money. You had to figure that we're going to come back and have some finish to the season. I had no doubts about that. I was glad that they kept it. And I think a lot of people, everybody in the East felt like it was a big deal to keep it, you know, East and West and not do that 1-16 seeding. Not too many teams wanted. I tell you right now, the Pacers were definitely against that. I think most teams would have been in the Eastern Conference. But I'm glad they kept it the way they have with the conferences, only because I think you need – because the season has been played in a certain way up to this point. If you knew it was going to be 1-16 seeding, I think you would have made certain decisions on who to sit on which games and whatever differently. You would have played for your seeding differently going forward. And I think keeping it – East-West was important as well, just for the whole symmetry of it. But look, I think it's going to be weird. The lack of fans. There's a whole bunch of variables, guys, that we haven't even accounted for, that we won't know how to account for when you go to the bubble concept. Is this going to be a season where a champion has to have an asterisk put on its name? I think so, because I think a lot of things change when you have no fans and, you have this environment that's different than any of them experienced, because some guys play better under pressure with all the screaming and they need that hype. Other guys kind of shrink in that moment. And so there's all sorts of things like that, aside from the long layoff that I think they're going to come into play on to kind of figure out what we see. We could see a team, in my opinion, that's, you know, at the bottom of the table in terms of the bottom four emerge from this whole thing just because it's the luck, you know, because of the way things are broken, because how those all those variables kind of work out. There's a lot of unknown. And so I guess in a way you could say it's exciting because you don't know, but also maybe some folks will not respect this champion as much if it's not Giannis in the Bucks, if it's not LeBron, or if it's not in the Lakers, and if it's not the Clippers. But I think the field is kind of wide open because of all of these kind of things that we don't know how to account for.
When you talk about the field just being wide open, and you also mentioned about, you know, Kyrie the contrarian, which we know all too well, it seems that this movement, there have been more younger voices that have really taken on more vocal leadership roles. You know, for every Kyrie and Chris Paul, you've got a Jaylen Brown and your guy, Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah.
Speak to me what you've seen out of him of late that is either consistent with what he's been or a sign that he's kind of stepped his outward speaking game up. Just what's different about him, if anything, as far as the leadership role that Malcolm has kind of played in all of this?
That's what they expected from him when they bought him in. I mean, not obviously this kind of scenario that would unfold, but that's part of the package of why they gave him $85 million. They thought he was a leader on and off the floor. And, you know, he kind of understood the moment that it was just bigger than basketball. He's the kind, you know, same reason why in part they like a guy like Oladipo, because of the image and because he handles himself well and that sort of thing. So they had that with Malcolm, but Malcolm is even more vocal and has so many more layers. You know his backstory, his history, his family. I mean, as a guy with two parents who were successful in their careers, instead of moving farther away from the inner city, they actually moved into it when he was growing up in Atlanta to kind of give him that perspective to make him understand the struggles of other people who look like him that may not have had as many opportunities as he had. And so, you know, I mean, the guy's named after Malcolm X, after all. So, I mean, so I think with Brogdon, you know, people will always tell me from the first day I ever talked about him with, you know, his head coach, Tony Bennett at UVA, you know, his agent, Danielle Cantor, we talked about him extensively, even when he was still in Milwaukee, was that, you know, he has this presidential kind of quality about him. You hear everyone say the same thing. And then you see him grab a megaphone and listen to him talk. And it's not an exaggeration. He does kind of have that statesman-like kind of thing going on with him. And I think because what you see with Malcolm is kind of consistent with what's been expected of him coming here. But also, like I said, I think he's kind of that leadership that they wanted to fill. Because you got to remember, when the Pacers overhauled the roster last summer, they got rid of a lot of key veterans, including Thad Young. So that's also one of those voids that they needed Malcolm to fill. And I think he's filled those shoes beyond any expectations. And, you know, you see a lot of these younger guys, man, coming into the league with thinking about a little bit more than just basketball itself. I've talked to different high school coaches and people and scouts over the years about, even if you look at, remember when guys were coming in as rookies and they would have, and not that you don't still see this because you do, but you see a lot more guys who look like Brogdon who are, not don't have tattoos coming into the league all the way up on their neck. Like, they're more image conscious, right? And that if you go to the 20 years ago, that was the thing. And it's not to say that it means you're a bad guy or you're not socially conscious because you have it, but there's a lot of guys who are thinking about, you know, more about image and endorsement deals, but also you know, thinking about bigger than just on the court than what they previously did. I think that's more of what I kind of gathered from folks. They're thinking about that more now than what they did, you know, 10, 20 years ago.
And the crazy thing about your boy Malcolm is that not only does he have that kind of presidential presence, he's got the damn voice. I mean, him and Barack Obama, is there really a difference when you hear them two if you don't see them talk, but you hear their voices? I mean, it's scary how much they sound alike.
Exactly. And, dude, he's one of those guys that when you're talking to, you can just talk to Malcolm all day. Because to me, when I talk to him, it doesn't feel like I'm talking to a basketball player
right, or
an athlete. I just feel like I'm talking to you can just open any can of worms with him, and he can riff on it. And he's, you know, hey, you know, let's talk about the space program. I mean, he could go off all day about it. Like, he's that kind of guy. Like, you know, it doesn't matter what topic. And I like to talk with guys about a lot of stuff that goes off the basketball court. And he's one of the few people where you can ask him his opinion on something. And it's not even for an on-record conversation necessarily, but you're just kind of, you know, shooting the breeze over stuff. And the conversations will take off in different directions on topics. It's like, wow, this guy is really sharp. He knows a lot about me. Hey, let's discuss the nonprofit corporation principle. And he can talk to you about it. That's crazy. How many NBA guys you can have that kind of conversation?
Right.
when Jaylen Brown went down to Georgia, the Celtics were quick to offer vocal support and say, you know, we want our players out there. I think the Pacers did the same thing too, right? Kevin Pritchard came out. What has that been like to have the organization sort of support their players in that movement?
Hey, I'm going to tell you, I was blown away. Not that what Pritchard said that he supported it, but how he said it. So I got an email, hey, can you do a call with Pritchard, you know, in about an hour? I thought it was like maybe somebody got hurt, you know, and there was some kind of news that we had to get to. No, it was Pritchard talking about what we see socially. And by the way, I don't know if any of you have seen the transcript or actually heard the audio, but he dropped about 3 or 4 F-bombs during the whole thing. Pritchard was so emotional, like to the point where he had tears coming down his face. And I mean, it was, and he's not that kind of guy. He's, you know, he's not Masai Ujiri who would just go off and just on the middle of something, just, you know, in public, just drop an F-bomb and don't care. And, you know, Masai wears his emotions on his sleeve. Pritchard's the opposite of that guy. So to see that for me was shocking. And I talked to him after that, like to kind of tell him like, man, where did that come from? You know? And he felt really bad that, you know, you heard these stories a lot of times. Hey, I knew about it. I had teammates who told me about it. And it wasn't until I saw the video that when I saw the guy die, how effing evil that was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so you have that guy now behind Malcolm and not only saying, you know, they want they want their players to be able to speak up and take positions like that, but encouraging it and saying that we're going to be with you every step of the way. And if we're not, hold our feet to the fire. And he was telling me, he says, if we don't do what we say we're going to do, we need to be called out on it, because this is not just something that, you know, we want to, once this all dies down, then it goes away. And so I thought the biggest question I asked him though was, what happens when you get the pushback? Because you're gonna have fans that's gonna say, "Shut up, stick to sports. We don't care. Shut up, Malcolm. You need to get fired." You know, that kind of stuff. What do you do? What does the ownership do if you anger a section of your fan base? And those people can be very vocal, and they can claim it. You know, we see it happen with corporations all the time. And what do? They fold. And he says that Herb Simon and his son Steve, the ownership group, they're firmly behind him, and they were in the meetings and said, let's go for it. So it's not only Pritchard supporting Brogdon, it's the ownership group saying, we're all in.
Hey there, it's Tom Haberstroh, your national NBA insider for NBC Sports and host of the Haberstroh podcast. With the ongoing protests and conversation about systemic racism and police brutality, I bring on Atlanta Hawks head coach Lloyd Pierce and ESPN's Amin El Hassan to discuss their roles in creating change and how sports can drive action. So download the Haberstroh Pod wherever you listen to podcasts.
What do you think about the segment of players who say returning to the court, playing basketball, takes away from their efforts to make social justice change out there? Like, it seems to be a sense that you can't do both. You know, my take is, I don't think these players understand that their decision not to play basketball has an impact, you know, down the line. It's sort of a trickle down. If the NBA doesn't come back, Does ESPN and Turner have to have layoffs? Do local, you know, regional sports networks that, like, so I feel like, you know, you can do both. What's your take on that?
I think there's no doubt you can do both. I mean, look, I don't think as many guys, like, even though some people may feel uneasy about it because of those reasons, I just think for a lot of guys, the financial implications for them to not get a check during that time is going to be probably the overriding force as, to this, as much as anything else. Let's face it, you know, it's going to come down. Hey, you know, there's this, ideally, I would not like to play and focus on social justice. Realistically, I have a lot of bills over here to pay. And usually I think that wins out. I mean, that's, it sounds crass, but that's true. But no, I think you can do both. I get it, but you know, I'm not trying to be cynical, but I guess I'll ask the same question to them that people will say to when I just brought up Kevin Pritchard to saying, hey, after all of these videos and all of this evidence of police brutality and all of the crazy things that we see with systemic racism that have been in our face for years, it took this for you and the Pacers to get behind the whole social justice effort. I'd say the same to some of those guys. Like all the stuff that we've seen for so long, it took, like, we've had all sorts of it. So that's the, I mean, maybe you are woke about it now. And I understand people, sometimes you need that kind of jolt to get you going in that direction. But you know, it you know, for instance, I'll give you a perfect example. It didn't take Maya Moore, this instance from Maya Moore, to go seek social justice, did it? Right. So I mean, that's me playing a little bit of devil's advocate. I understand it, but yeah, I agree with you, Kyle. I think you can do both at once. And actually, you know, you probably have a bigger platform too if you're able to do both at once.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the thing that I don't understand about those who think you can't do both. I mean, think about it. The minute you get in that bubble, all eyes are on you. All eyes are on you. So you have the platform to amplify your message to an even wider audience than you would if you were, let's say, out there marching down a Brooklyn Bridge or in Boston or in Atlanta. What's your take, though, Jermichael, on the Pacers and just whether they're comfortable as a group going into the bubble? Because obviously there are, as we've talked about, there are a lot of concerns, whether it's the virus, whether it's social justice, their families and how that will impact them being away from them for so long. What's your general sense of how your guys are comfortable with going into the bubble for what maybe 3 months?
I mean, I was told last week that the core guys, at least, I mean, I haven't verified with everybody. Is everybody comfortable going in? You know, obviously Malcolm's going in. He's comfortable with it. Oladipo is. I checked about him last week to make sure. I had heard that previously he was a little bit iffy about it, but I was told last week that he's definitely down with going in. I think with those two guys being the leaders of the team, that actually is going to make it easier for the other guys to follow. So my sense is that, you know, it's a team that's, you know, it's, well, everybody's kind of in that 20, with the exception of the couple of rookies, everybody's in that, you know, 25 to 30 age range. I think people with more, Brogdon doesn't have a family. Oladipo, I mean, other than obviously your brothers and sisters and, you know, your parents and stuff, but doesn't have a wife and kids sort of thing. Same with Oladipo, same with Miles Turner. I think Sabonis, same with Sabonis too. I could be wrong. He doesn't have any kids to my knowledge. So I think it's a little bit different for their core guys. I think it's different if you have a wife and kids and maybe you're thinking about more things and you're a little bit older. And so I just see with the Pacers, I don't think that's going to be a huge issue for them. Now, maybe when you get there, it becomes a huge issue because, you know, there's the, you know, it sounds like it's okay, but I mean, can you imagine if all four of us were locked up in a place, same place?
Oh, hell no.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Oh my God. I'd have a murder charge on my hands, bro.
That'd be two of us.
Yeah.
And then we'd be Buck Mix in jail.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, I don't think the Pacers are going to have a problem with it. Everything I've heard over the last couple of weeks has been pretty positive in terms of them going in that direction. And I think it's a really smart group of guys. So I don't think they're going to be surprised by anything they get into. They have a really high IQ team, and Brogdon is just one of the examples of it. I think maybe you have some of these little younger guys who are used to going out to the clubs every night and hanging out and – I think a team, if you have a team full of guys like that, maybe you can have a few more, you can have a few more issues with kind of trying to contain that. The Pacers kind of have a different vibe about it in that regard.
Where are they at health-wise? Oladipo, I mean, I got to assume these 3 months can help him. Yes. Brogdon as well. Is there a vibe around the team about, okay, we're finally healthy? Like, what do they feel like they can accomplish?
Yeah. You know, Brogdon declared himself healthy about a month ago. You know, he was out indefinitely right when the season kind of was put on hiatus because he had that crazy injury he got in Milwaukee where he jumped to contest a shot and pulled a muscle in his thigh that also hurt his hip. It was a crazy injury. But anyway, that didn't require surgery. So he's back. I think that's the biggest thing. They went into this break, you know, with the exception of the game they lost to the Celtics, you know, that was the best stretch of basketball that they had played probably all season. Came from behind in the fourth quarter, won against Dallas, at Dallas, without Brogdon, that sort of thing. So you saw a team that was playing some of its best basketball. So with Brogdon, I think he's back. He's back. Doug McDermott had a toe injury that it kept him out the last three games. He's fine. He's back. Jeremy Lamb's not coming back because of the seriousness. He broke and tore just about everything in his left leg at one time. So he's the only guy that's kind of out. Everybody else is back. I mean, this was a team that started Brian Bowen, I think maybe a game or two before playing the season, that final game before the hiatus. They had to start Brian Bowen at guard, a two-way player who had played only like two or three times, appeared in two or three games all year. That's how injured they were. So that they had to start Brian Bowen in the road game and still won that road game, by the way. So I think teams like the Pacers who are in their position health-wise, the layoff probably helps more than it hurts because they had so many guys. Every team has guys dinged up, but they had guys missing multiple stretches, long stretches of games during that time. So I think health-wise, they're going to be just fine. And actually – I think that may have benefited them better than or as much as anyone else during this time.
Yeah, Jim, because I was thinking, you know, when I look at the East, I honestly see six teams that can get to the finals, you know, because no fans now. We talked earlier, I think these role players might actually play better, you know, because it's almost a glorified pickup game for them. Where do the Pacers stack up, you think, with the rest of the East? And with Oladipo getting 3 months here to sort of, you know, try and get back to himself, how far do you think they can go?
Man, I think anything's possible. I wouldn't be surprised if they ended up, you know, one of the last two teams in the East in the finals. I would not be surprised at all. Now, if you'd asked me during the regular season if everything had come, you know, kind of played out normally, I'd say it's a team that could get out of the first round into the second round. That's probably their ceiling. Yeah, I think, you know, Oladipo, he's been training like a beast, I've been told, 5 days a week since the stoppage occurred. So you saw the way he played against the Seas in his last game, 27 points. That was the best he's played and shot the three-point ball all season that he's been back. So I think this is a team that can get pretty far. And if they end up in a matchup, I really want to see them in a matchup with the Miami Heat and see if that Heat will still be between Jimmy Butler and T.J. Warren. I wonder if it, you know, with no fans there, though, egging them on, is it the same?
Or, might know, be even better because we can hear it then, hopefully, yeah, you know? We can hear the talk.
Yeah, and by the way, with Jimmy, I think with Jimmy, he just wants to, like, with Jimmy, he don't care. Like, I think he's going to be angry no matter what. So, yeah, I really want to see that first-round series. And I actually think the Pacers, even though they lost twice in the 2 meetings to Miami this year, they were a better team when the stoppage happened than what they were when they played Miami. And I think they can win a series with them. But I really want to see it because of Jimmy and TJ. I do. I mean, will we see more hands being thrown as a result?
I love me some TJ Warren. Have always loved me some TJ Warren. As Kyle Rashid Draper knows.
I know.
He knows. So I am all about that matchup. But when I look at this Pacers team, I like they make me nervous from an outsider standpoint only because there's so many unknowns about them because their core guys, as you pointed out earlier, they really haven't had a ton of time to play together. I think Malcolm and Victor, I think they've only played maybe 10 games all season together just because of guys being out and things like that. How big a concern is chemistry when you look at this Pacers team in what will be, you know, a condensed end of the regular season, where those two guys in particular will play almost as many games in this condensed part of the season as they did the entire season leading up to the break.
Yeah, I mean, there's chemistry concerns, I think, with a lot of things. Like they change so much on the way they play from the early part of the year to the second half of the year that I think in terms of chemistry, look, there haven't been enough games between Oladipo and Brogdon. But I think in terms of chemistry, there hasn't been enough games, or at least quality games, with Miles Turner and Sabonis playing together. Yeah. And they started playing together great because they changed a lot of defensive principles. When by the time they ended up, we saw them in mid-March, the last time we saw them in mid-March, they changed so much defensively. They started hard-hedging the ball screens. They stopped down in the pick and roll. They started doing different things because the problem that they had with the guards is that the guards got beat too much off the bounce. And I think part of the reason why Malcolm, for instance, had trouble guarding, especially these little small speedy guards like, say, Kemba, his injuries didn't help either with his leg and his back. And so he had trouble keeping guys out of the lane. Jeremy Lamb couldn't keep anybody out of the lane, which shouldn't have been a surprise. And so it put a lot of stress on the bigs in the middle. And you saw Miles and Domas being always in foul trouble, put under stress, having to guard their man and somebody else's. So I think chemistry-wise, they figured that out by the time we got to the break. And I would be concerned about that, some of these concepts that they put in. Is it like starting over again because they were in a groove? And Victor, I think defensively, for instance, Victor was playing much better than he did offensively in his comeback. But Malcolm has been in and out of the lineup so much. I would say if Malcolm is healthy, I'd be less concerned about the chemistry because I think IQ-wise with him and Victor up top, they're going to be okay. But it's really the health thing. I mean, if I gave you guys the laundry list of injuries that caused Malcolm to either leave games early or just miss games completely, we'd have to be on here about another hour and a half. I mean, his hamstring strain, he had lower back tightness, he tore a ligament in his pinky, abdominal pull. I mean, it was like concussion. It just goes on and on and on. It doesn't stop. I mean, that was a knock against him, right, when he was in free agency and when he was coming out of college, that he was injury prone. So, I think the chemistry issue is a concern. But I think it's tied in to Malcolm's health. I think they can figure out the rest. If he's able to be healthy and stay on the floor, I think they can figure that other stuff out, at least with the guards.
I know you said you want to see that Pacers Heat matchup, but up here, Celtics fans don't want to see Philly in that sixth seed. It's a bad matchup for them. Do you get a feel from Indy fans, like, who do they want? Do they want the Pacers to get up to the five, to the four? Like, who do they want to match up with? Is there an ideal scenario for the Pacers?
They always want to get up to the highest seed possible because, like, the three seed was possible. What was it, 2.5 games, if I'm not mistaken, or four games, something to that effect. So they wanted the three seed just because it's the highest seed. But I think because of the heat between Butler and Warren, that's all anybody talks about. All of a sudden, Jimmy Butler's a punk. He's not very good. He's overrated. It's obviously all crazy. Like, Jimmy's crazy. That's fair. But they want Jimmy Butler in the Heat. Whatever it means, whatever seed you got to get to get there, that's the matchup they want more than anything. I actually wouldn't mind seeing a rematch between the Pacers and the Celtics in the playoffs.
Mm. Yeah, that'd be a good one. Yeah,
I think. Let me tell you, it's not going to be anything like last year. Like, and it's, you know, I actually would kind of like to see that stylistically. I'm really intrigued. I actually think the Pacers and have a chance. I'm not saying that they would win, that they have a 50-50 chance of winning that series if both teams are what they were when we last saw him. I mean, that's the huge caveat, right? I mean, how do we know who's going to come back looking like Sean Kemp? I mean, you know, that changes everything too, right? Right? And that's like, so everything is predicated on if the teams return looking exactly like they looked previously. I actually like the matchup with the Celtics, and I think it'll be a heck of a lot more. Last year, I thought they'd get swept all along by Boston because they were playing their worst basketball by the time the playoffs hit. And this year, going into when we were in March, they were playing their best basketball of the season. And so I think that is as important as what your record is, what your seeding is. You know, I was telling Kevin Pritchard this last year when we were going into the playoffs. I said, you know, Brooklyn is the number six seed, but Brooklyn as a six seed in six games, they were six games worse than the Pacers. So they won, what, 42 last year. But Brooklyn, despite having six fewer wins and being the six seed, was a better team than the Pacers going into the playoffs. And the playoffs proved that. Like, you know, it was – and it was the Pacers had already hit their peak and they were going downhill fast. And that offensive – that offense, if you call it that, that you saw from them in the series with Boston was like some of the worst basketball I've seen since seeing Sherrod play pickup. Like,
it's right.
Right?
Right. Oh, man.
Terrible basketball, right? So, but, yeah, so I think obviously Miami is the best, the matchup I want to see, that people here want to see, but I actually would be really intrigued by a series with the Celtics, and I think it would be totally different if both teams returned to what they were in March.
Just a couple more here, J. Michael, before we let you go. Miles Turner. Mm-hmm. What's his future in Indy? I mean, it seems like, you know, trade rumors, you know, even Celtics fans are like, we should get Miles Turner. What's going on with him there in Indy?
Well, they've been, you know, they were trying, they listened to a lot of offers from him last year around the trade deadline. There was a lot of discussion about him last year. So that was 2019 about him being moved. There was no discussion about him being moved this year, even though there were a lot of teams that went after him and called to inquire about it. The Pacers in 2019 were more likely to move him than what they were in 2020. And they decided against that. So that he wasn't really on the market. I mean, Washington really was interested in trying to pry Miles away this year. But that wasn't going to happen. They kind of realized they're in a tough spot. Or you could say they're in a good spot. I guess it depends on your perspective. You have two guys, like Sabonis is making almost $80 million. Turner's making almost $80 million. So you got two bigs who are actually both fives. They're not fours. Right. And one of them has to play the four, that's Sabonis, on the defensive side of the ball. And that's not ideal for him. But funny thing is, when I talk about how much better the team has played going into this and going into March, Sabonis defensively, if he's able to get set, he's okay as long as he's not going against, like, having to defend Jaylen Brown. But if he's going against a traditional four or somebody who's not some lightning fast sort of guy, he's okay. He's not great in space, but he's okay if he's able to set up. It's just that his reaction time is a little bit off. And if you get him in transition, you can get to the rim and get easy buckets. But Turner's different in that Turner can defend a little bit better out in space. He can defend the rim. The problem, of course, with Turner is that you can't offensively depend on him every night the way you do with Sabonis. Of course, the flip side with Sabonis is you can game plan, as the Celtics showed in the playoffs last year, to take away his offense because it's not the most creative and complex. It's pretty basic stuff. You switch a small guy on him in the post. They go to him in the post, and he's gonna kill that small guy in the post. But if you double-team him from different directions, it can kind of throw him off. So they're kind of caught up. Who do you want to play? Who do you want to build your team around in the middle? Do you want to have Turner in the middle, or do you want to have Sabonis in the middle? I think ultimately both guys' future is at the five. Turner is a guy I think they realize that he has so much value around the league, they're going to kind of wait and see what kind of comes out of maybe what kind of offers they get, what, you know, how things kind of shake out. They're not ready to pull the trigger on anything of deciding, hey, we're going to keep Miles or we're going to keep Domas, because they just don't have enough information on what kind of team I guess they're going to be going forward. Is Nate McMillan going to stay long-term? Because he's going to be up for an extension soon. What your team is going to look like. They got to figure all of that stuff out before they decide, what do you keep Miles Turner long-term or do you trade now where you can get the most value for him? Because here's the catch. The Pacers need two things. They need a four, a true four, and they need another superstar. And if you can trade Miles or Domas to get another superstar, would you do it? I think the answer probably would be yes. Right. You could trade one and get another superstar. So I guess the question is, it's kind of up in the air. But I don't think they're in any rush to go ahead and move Turner or Sabonis this summer. this fall,
yeah,
or during the season. I think it's going to kind of depend on how things shake out with this team. But I think Turner's undervalued by fans in Indiana, but the 29 other cities outside of Indiana or 29 locations in the league outside of Indiana, I think they think of him more highly than people in Indiana do, because he and Sabonis play the same position, because Sabonis has better stats. And let's not deny the elephant in the room. And I've talked about – I just wrote a story about this last week. There's a racial difference, and I think that plays into it as well.
Mm. It's funny you should go down that lane.
I have to. Because we're, you know why? Because I'm tired of discussing it with people on background, whispering about it, and just right. like just we can should be able to have an honest discussion about it, and it shouldn't offend anybody. There's no doubt that element factors into
that actually brings me to my question. Now, I wasn't going to be as straight no chaser about it as you are, and I'm glad you. I like that about you, Gordon Hayward, yeah. Pride and joy of the state of Indiana. He could potentially opt out of his deal this offseason. I'm not going to say fall because we don't even know if the damn offseason is going to be fall. We'll just say opt out this fall. He could do that. I doubt if he will. That's a lot of coins he'd be leaving on the table. Mm-hmm. Let's assume that he plays the season out and then he becomes a free agent the next offseason after this one. Would that be someone that would fall under that superstar umbrella, or at a minimum, a player that Indiana would have some interest in at a minimum, kicking the tires around to see if he wants to come home?
I think there's no doubt it would be, in part because even though I don't consider Gordon a superstar, I consider him a good player. I think superstar is just another level that goes beyond money. Does he change the game in the sense that the whole team has to pretty much, hey, we got to put our best defender on him and change everything we do to stop him? I don't think Gordon's that type of guy, but he's definitely a good player. But I think he is the type of player, despite pigmentation, that the Pacers would want. Because, you know, he can play multiple positions. And if you look at the Pacers roster right now, they got a bunch of guys that can play multiple positions. And you can play even more small ball kind of lineups. Let's say, for instance, you hypothetically moved on Turner or Sabonis. Now you have space where you can go a real small ball lineup and slot guys like that at the four. And come up with some real diverse lineups that will give people trouble, and you still would have a big man slash rim protector underneath to help help keep your defensive integrity. The kind of player Hayward is the kind of player I think that they would definitely be interested in. Shoots the three. The Pacers don't get up enough threes, and they've acknowledged that quite often. So they need a true 3-point shooting four, or guy who can slot in at the four. So because of that, that's why I think a guy like Hayward would work, despite his connections to Indiana. I think that's really, in this case with him, that would be a cherry on top sort of situation. But they need more shooters and long ball shooters. And I think that's no doubt would be a fit.
Last thing for me, what is the outsider perspective on Boston? Like, what do you think of their team based on what you've seen and what they can accomplish?
Boston's pretty – it's weird. Actually, I like the squad, though. I think I like last year's squad. Would I say I like last year's squad better? I don't know, because Kyrie was on that team. Maybe I did.
Outside perspective, probably like that team last year better because you knew.
But I think they're a good squad. I do think that the Pacers are a good matchup, like I said before, because I think on the interior is where they would have such a big advantage. I think they've lost. Look, Al Horford leaving, could you afford to lose him? Yeah. Could you afford to pay him $100 million? Look, if you had to pay him $100 million to keep him, I understand. You know, you got to let him walk. But I think on the interior, I think that's where the Pacers or a team like the Pacers have a bigger advantage. I think that's where Boston is weaker and where they're more vulnerable than maybe what they've been in a couple of years past. And so while I think Boston is still a good team, I don't think they're a conference finals level team. Though I know a lot of people think they are. I think they've taken a step back. I think this year was going to be a step back, or the perspective is a step back before they can take that other step forward. Sometimes you got to do that. You got to take a step down, retool, figure out some things, and then you can spring forward. So I still think they're in good position. to be a team that competes to get to the conference finals and have a chance to go to the next step. I just thought this season, even though they're still good, just like I feel like Miami this season is good and they've gotten better, I still think the future in terms of being able to get to that next level to where they'd be like, man, this is – the Pacers have no chance against them. I think that's a year or two away to see what happens with Boston to kind of figure out exactly what they're going to be. I think – and that's why I think the Pacers against the Celtics is a much better series than what it was before as a result. So Boston's good. I think – so I would say that they're a second-round team for me.
Dang, dude. You're about to get some Twitter hate. You know that, right? Hey, Celtics fans about to come at you.
Hey, look, I'm thinking about matchups. Like, you know how the playoffs is. It's always about matchups. You get the wrong matchup. And I just, you know, and that's why I say, like, if somehow the Pacers and the Celtics ended up in a first-round series, I took Boston last year. Yeah. I would take the Pacers this year.
Wow.
So don't tell me I took the Pacers – I'm taking the Pacers this year because, well, you covered the Pacers, you lived there. I took Boston last year.
Okay, right. And not the homer, not a homer, okay.
That was easy. I took Boston last year. Like, the Pacers, my goodness gracious, they were scoring like, you know, remember those old Georgetown games with Patrick Ewing when the final score was like 38, 37? Like, those are the kind of games they were playing. Like, they were scoring 30-something points in halves and stuff. Like, they had no chance to beat Boston last year. But I would take the Pacers against them because of all the reasons I've talked about. Sabonis, the interior, I think their guards. You know who's the game changer that no one talks about? Well, why the Pacers are so much better? Justin Holiday.
Yeah.
Justin Holiday. Okay. Not Aaron, Justin. Because Aaron lit him up too, though, for a game earlier.
Yeah, he did. Justin Holiday is the most low-key, most improved slash impact player that's been in the NBA this season. Don't just look at his numbers, but he's been their best, most consistent perimeter defender from start to finish of this year. He's been guarding point guards, two guards, three guards. He's been defending fours. He's undersized at fours, at the four spot. But he's done everything. And if you really want some good comedy, watch when the Pacers, they got ripped when they went to Utah. But watch the first half when Justin Holiday is matched up with Jordan Clarkson. Jordan Clarkson thinks for some reason he's got Holiday isolated. He's going to shake him down and break him down, not going to move the ball. Man, it's not just comical. It happens repeatedly. And Holiday owns him. I mean, it was like a father playing with his son in the driveway. Holiday's not even jumping and like, get that stuff out of here. That's how good of a defensive player Justin Holiday has been. And then you throw on top of it, he's shooting 40% from three. He's like a middle to low three-point shooter his entire career. Now he's shooting 41, 42% from three on top of the defense. And he's in the games in the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter when it's close. He's making $4.5 million a year. Easily, wow. He's outplayed his contract. Easily. So that's the other thing I would throw in talking of why the Pacers are so much better, because they have that guy now at that spot that they didn't, who can come off the bench and do all sorts of things and plug in all sorts of gaps. So that's why he's part of the reason why I'm so high on them. And then, yeah, you throw in his brother Aaron. He did cook the C's last time he played, right?
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, my man. That's it. You got anything else, fellas, for J. Michael? He got to go, can we go pay his yard dude, his lawn
just,
dude.
Yeah, I was going to say, can we get some water? That's all it was. Just give the lawn man some water.
Hey, there's no noise outside. I hope he's still conscious. No.
I'm going to check in a minute.
Hey, Sherrod, I'm going to take a video. I'm going to take a video of him walking. He's a nice old guy, but I don't know how he does it. He does baby steps. He can barely walk. I'm like, how does he do all these yards?
So he's out there forever in a day cutting your damn lawn with no water. Damn. Damn.
We have two spigots out back, bro. Like, come on, man.
Capitalism at its finest, man. What? Look at you, dude.
Here's the thing: if we get Celtics Pacers in the playoffs, we're gonna need him to jump on the pod at some point.
Right,
If I told him jump on the pod, he have no idea what the hell that means.
All right,
well, does that pod got water?
I know, right?
Hey man, the ocean, like I said. Clear blue waters at Mile and a Half.
A mile away.
Wow.
It's clear.
Must be
it's,
nice.
It's that
beautiful, must be nice.
It's that beautiful greenish blue Sarasota water, bro.
Oh, boy.
All right, Jay Michael. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. This is Jay Michael. He covers the Pacers for the Indianapolis Star. Thanks for jumping on the podcast, Jay Michael.
Thanks, Jay.